Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/ACAST. That's burrow.com/ACAST. burrow.com/ACAST.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hi, I'm Josh.
I'm Adam.
And I'm Al. Now, we understand that every 3 seconds a new podcast is created, and now there's actually one podcast for every 3 people.
So we just wanted to take a minute to say thank you very much for downloading this one, and we hope you enjoy it.
In a nutshell, we realised that some of our film tastes weren't what you'd call conventional. So we decided to talk about them and hopefully shed some light on some films that either didn't get what we felt deserved at the time, or we just wanted to rewatch and talk about them.
You don't have to have seen the film, but if you haven't, you may want to just give it a quick Google.
What's the and that?
Enjoy the podcast. Hello and welcome to Just Films and That, where we discuss films we think may be underrated, underappreciated, or we just wanted to talk about them. I'm Josh Hallam. I'm here with Adam Ward.
Hello.
And Al Bollins.
Hello.
So this is the second episode that we're recording, second of our lockdown specials, if you like. So we hope everyone is doing well. Adam, Al, both okay? Adam, I'll come to you first. You okay?
Yeah, not bad, thanks.
Bored?
I'm bored. I've been jogging a lot to sort of like be less bored. Yeah. But that's boring. I'm pretty bored.
It was my birthday, so I've been eating lots of cake and donuts and terrible things that will give me diabetes. More or less.
Well, at least hopefully we're coming through the end of it now. I should just say before we start, we are doing this again via Zoom, so bear with us with the sound quality. We'll do our best. We're excited today. We were joined by our first guest who isn't a legitimate film critic. Clarice, how are you? Clarice Lockery.
Hello, thank you so much for inviting me and calling me legitimate. Well, I love it.
how are you coping with lockdown?
It's been interesting. I live alone in a very, very small studio flat, so I'm having a bit of an old boy light experience. If anyone's seen Old Boy,
someone's delivering your Chinese food once a day, and
I don't even get that part of it. I would love some dumplings right now. So yeah, it's been interesting. We'll say that.
So, I mean, as you're our first film critic, I'm quite interested. Are you still able to work during this? Are they sending you screeners, or are you just kind of doing what you can?
Yes. So yeah, screeners are still happening. The issue is that there are actually very few films coming out. I think everyone has the impression that, oh, everything's like, there's so much stuff to stream. And if you actually look at the weekly list of movies, it's pretty limited. So, but, you know, my job have been pretty cool about it and have just let me write about older movies, which is nice. It's been nice to actually go back and explore.
Yeah, that's cool.
What, any particular ones stand out to you?
I wrote last week about Audition. Yeah, once you've seen it, you can't get it out of your head. I'll just say that. There are some images in this movie that stay with you.
So I think something I'm always interested to know as a film critic, how many films like do you watch a week, roughly? Obviously it's different most weeks, like on a standard week, but when you're not stuck in your old boy flat.
Probably in terms of new releases, Like, not that many, to be honest. Like, just with my job, I review 3 a week. That's, like, my gig. Right. So I'll watch those three, and then I'll usually try and catch up with, like, one or two other ones that are coming out to make sure that, you know, because it's another part of your job is you, yes, you write the reviews, but you also just have to be kind of aware of the general landscape and just have an awareness of everything that's coming out. So you kind of have the writing part, and then you have the self-educating part.
Ever been a time when you kind of sitting there in the cinema and you're watching something and you think, oh, I should have done something else?
No, because the other jobs that I did this before this were not good.
I've heard other critics talk about that sort of thing, that they do always kind of go, but then you think to yourself, you are watching films and writing about them, so there's worse things that you could be doing, I suppose.
Yeah, because one of my former jobs was I used to stand in Edinburgh Airport and try and sell diarrhea pills to people. So if I'm sitting like watching a bad movie, I was like, I would rather be doing this than standing in Edinburgh Airport selling diarrhea pills to people. So yeah, I've never taken this job for granted.
Long flight, sir. Can I interest you in some diarrhea pills?
I had to go up to them in the shop and say, hey, where are you traveling? Are you traveling somewhere where you might poop your pants? It's a diarrhea pill. It was a horrible job. But also because weirdly, it was over the holidays, and I, for some reason, a lot of people were going to funerals. So that was a very, very awkward experience. Yeah.
So I suppose the final question I've got is, do you ever find yourself, obviously a lot of films, people will say stuff like the critics didn't like it or the critics loved it. Do you ever find yourself disagreeing with the consensus? So like everyone loves The Godfather, something that's more or less universal, and you think, I didn't think it was all that, or the other way around, which I suppose brings us neatly onto the film you picked.
I find the idea of the consensus very weird, because I always find it odd when people talk about like the critics and the fans, because it makes it out as if like, I am not human. I am some sort of like weird beast from like the depths of the sea that comes out and says 2 stars and then like returns down. That's the odd thing. It's like, I am just a person who likes movies, and I write about them. And I guess the reason I do that job is I write about them in a way that people like to read about it. Like that's the only thing that separates me from everybody else. And so yeah, I kind of hate the idea of the consensus, because we're all individuals and we all come from different backgrounds and different experiences, and that all feeds into the kinds of movies that you love and why you love movies. So yeah, I find the whole idea really weird.
It is that thing, isn't it, of like you say, like it's like films are taken to the critics as an offering, like a Gladiator or something, and they kind of give it a thumbs up or thumbs. You take it to one room where every critic is sat there and they just kind of give you a thumbs up or a thumbs down.
Joaquin Phoenix, the Gladiator. It was really weird. I was so hot for Joaquin Phoenix in Gladiator, where he plays like an incestuous murdering Roman emperor.
Topless sword That's practice insane. In a frosty forest. I mean, what's better than that?
Yeah. You know, yeah, he had some problems, but you know, I can change him.
So we'll move on to the kind of main bulk of the podcast. We do always start with a completely random question before we get into the meat and two veg of the film. So I'll ask the lads first, and that'll give you a general idea of what it is we mean. Adam, what's your dance floor vibe killer? And I'm talking, you're at a wedding, you're at a party, song comes on, you're on the dance floor, you think, that's not it for me. I'm going to get another drink. I'm going to get some Vol-au-Vents.
Well, as you know, I'm all about pop and funk. So, like, I want to hear some JT when I'm out there. I want to hear some Bruno Mars. I want to hear some Luther Vandross. I kind of hate any kind of novelty song. Any kind of novelty song and I'm out. So, like, Gangnam Style, YMCA, anything like that, I'm done. If it's a song like, if like a Señorita by JT, which is always my wedding pick song, even if no one else is dancing, I'm on the dance floor.
Al?
I've got two. I don't like...
no, joking, go on.
I don't like Build Me Up Buttercup, because it's overplayed and I'm sick of it. And what's the other one? Baby Love.
Yeah, I hate that.
Baby Love.
Controversially, mine, I've got two, similar to Al, even though I said one, is Dancing Queen by ABBA, which a lot of people always recoil at. And the other one is Young Hearts Run Free. I don't know why. I like ABBA, but for some reason, those two songs just make me, just kind of kill it for me. They're like, stop me in my stride.
The other one just reminds me of Romeo and Juliet. So I don't dislike it.
Mm.
The Baz Luhrmann one.
Yeah, the other one.
That's what Mercutio sings.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know, just something about it. I don't know what it is. I don't know, I suppose it's just one of those things. Clarice, what about you?
It's weird. I usually just leave the dance floor when I'm tired.
That's true.
I'm like, my arms hurt. Time to give up. I like anything slow. I'm not like a slow. You know where it gets slow and like everyone's trying to be sexy? Because I'm not like a sexy dancer. I'm like, I dance like Taylor Swift, where I kind of like mime the song with my. Got to act out the song, that, and it's really embarrassing, which is why I like don't go to a lot of dance floors, because I hate how I dance. But yeah, anytime it's kind of slow and sexy, I'm like, well, this is not for me. Time to back out.
Time to get a drink.
Yeah, I'm not one for a winding down slow ballad type song. Like, I think it should be up there all night and then you finish big.
I'm more of a solo dancer. Like, that's just if someone else tries to dance with me, I don't know how that works. I just need to dance in my own world away from everyone.
You actually grew up in the town from Footloose and they had to leave because they were...
That's what it needs to be. Like, I have to go into a warehouse on my own and just let it all out.
The song Footloose, that's how you end the night.
That's a good one.
Know
that's
the dance from Footloose. So if that comes on, I'm on the dance floor.
Okay, so we'll move on to talking about this week's film. The film that Clarice has chosen is Crimson Peak, which is from 2015, I think. So, big, similar to last week, big spoiler for that. Please go and watch it and come back and listen. If you don't mind, carry on listening, but we will be doing spoilers throughout. So I think it's set in the kind of turn of the century of the 18th to 1900s. It's about a young writer who kind of has aspirations to be a professional writer, similar to Mary Shelley or Jane Austen at the time. A kind of mysterious stranger played by Tom Hiddleston and his sister come to her where she lives in kind of rural New York in America. They fall in love and he takes her back to his house in England. And then from there, some kind of spooky things go on. And that's all I'm really going to say, because I think the rest of the plot will come out in what we discuss. Have I missed anything there, Felice? Would you say that's fair enough?
Yeah, that's pretty much it. Like, spunky gal, spooky guy, and they go off to England.
I think that's actually on the DVD cover. So, apart from the fact that we asked you to pick a film, why did you pick this? Obviously, we discuss films that are underrated. Sometimes we just want to talk about them. I'm intrigued. Why did you pick this?
I picked it just because I remember being very frustrated when it came out, because I love this film wholeheartedly. It's one of my personal favorites from the past like five years, and seeing, I think every time I would see a criticism, because often, like most of the time, if I like something and a lot of people dislike it, it's fine. I see the criticism and I'm like, granted, I get that. We just have different tastes. But I would read the criticisms of Crimson Peak and I'd be like, oh, but you just don't get it. But So I just remember a feeling of pure frustration during October 2015 because of Crimson Peak.
Is that sort of thing that you kind of come across a lot, would you say? Or is this something that really stands out for you?
No, not often. Most of the time, if I love something and everyone else I know hates it, I just go, well, I understand my own tastes and I know that I have quite odd tastes sometimes. Like, I don't know, like a movie like Mother. I understand why people hate Mother. I get it. I read the criticism. I go, granted, that's perfect. Yes. Yes, it is a very weird movie that doesn't make sense. This, and I think possibly because, I think just with this one, it's because I am such a huge fan of the Gothic genre and Gothic literature. And I saw that so many of the criticisms were kind of also criticizing the concept of Gothic literature. And I think that's what got me mad. And it's like, no, but you can't, but it's so good. And it's like my favorite genre. And why are you just attacking everything I love? So I think that's why I got a bit sensitive about it.
Bit defensive.
Yeah. I mean, people are still allowed to dislike it, obviously, but I just get a little, if I just get a little bit tense.
I suppose question for the pod, Adam, had you seen this before?
No, I hadn't seen it. So it was like, I just completely overlooked it, especially with it being like Guillermo del Toro. Like, I've watched a few of his films, so, well, quite a lot of his films. So, like, this one was a film I knew nothing about. I hadn't heard the name. And I knew, like, it had a big cast as well. So it's interesting that I, knew nothing about it going in.
Yeah, Al, how about you, mate?
No, I'd heard of it. I thought it was a war film, like a really old war film. And I think I thought that with Warrior as well.
Are you thinking of Crimson Tide, the kind of submarine film from...
Possibly. I thought this was a war film. I 7 seconds in, I thought, I this is not
I
what
feel
I thought.
That should be a war is this? Films
what war is this?
I actually hadn't seen it either, so that's... That might be the first time since possibly Dirty Dancing, since none of us had seen the film going in.
Possibly,
so that's interesting. So I suppose I'll go to you first, Adam. What did you think of it? What did you like? What didn't you?
You know, I enjoyed the relationship between Lucille and Thomas. I thought that was an interesting aspect of it. Mm-hmm. How they were kind of tethered together, and you could see that there was some good in him. But because everything they'd been through, he kind of couldn't really come out of that. I quite like that whole aspect of it. And the youth character is an interesting character. The way she was portrayed as being quite weak to begin with and got progressively stronger as the piece went on. Yeah.
What about you, Al? What did you think?
I'm very sorry, Clarice. I felt like it hit its stride too late. Like the first hour of the film, I wasn't that bothered about really. And then when you know, it's all kicking off in the last sort of 40 minutes, half an hour, I started to get into it then. I started to really enjoy it. But I don't know. Is it a horror film? Is that what we call it?
I think it's a kind of gothic horror thriller type. I think it kind of toes the line between a couple of genres. What would you say, Clarice?
Yeah, it is. It's gothic horror.
Mm.
This is the thing about Crimson Peak. It's the main... I find parts of this movie quite scary, personally. Maybe that's my personal experience of ghosts.
Mm.
But I feel like the main thrust of the movie is not to scare you. And this is the thing that Edith says... In the movie, the ghosts are a metaphor. The ghosts are a metaphor for the past. And when she says that in the film, she's talking about Crimson Peak as well, because she's writing a piece of gothic literature and the film is a piece of gothic horror. And so what I love about it is that all these ghosts are not there to scare her. They're there because they're desperately trying to send a message across. And so it's this mixture of, like, the whole movie is a mixture of fear, fear, tragedy, and passion, I would say. And those are like three very intense emotions, and you like put them in a pot and you stir them around and then you pull them out, and that's Crimson Peak.
Mm. I mean, I have to say, I disagree with you, Al. I really loved it. I thought it was brilliant.
Someone's on my team.
Don't listen to me.
Similar to both of you guys. I remember it coming out. I remember hearing it reviewed on the film show on Radio 5. And I just remember it just kind of passing me by. I remember probably thinking, I'll watch that. Because, again, like Guillermo del Toro, love his whole kind of aesthetic and the way he puts his films together. And it must have just passed me by. I don't know why. Probably a Marvel film at the time or something that I wanted to see. But I loved it. I would never have sat down and probably picked this to watch. So I'm really glad that you picked it, Clarice, because I really loved it. I loved the kind of whole way it looked. I loved the performances. I loved the script. I thought it was like a really, I mean, I'm fairly certain, I don't even have to tell me, it's not based on any pre-existing material. It's an original script. Am I right?
Yes. So it's an original story, but it's very deliberately taking elements from like lots of gothic. Okay, I mean, the characters like the Fall of the House of Usher. It's sort of like kind of loosely based off that. And then they throw in a bunch of stuff from Edith Wharton's ghost stories. So that's what's kind of interesting. It's an original story, but it's kind of like a Quentin Tarantino version of Gothic, because you know how like Tarantino just takes stuff and he puts it together and creates something new. Like this is the Gothic version of that.
One thing I quite liked is, like you said, it was scary, had moments that are scary, but it wasn't there to scare you. Wasn't even sure. I don't know what you guys think about this. I'll come to you in a minute. I wasn't even sure until the end if ghosts were real in the world of the film. I kind of thought for a long period it could have been in her head.
Yeah, me too. It wasn't until you saw the ghost of Thomas at the end and Lucille had seen him as well.
Yeah, there's that moment of realization between the two of them, isn't there, where it's like, oh, he's here. And I kind of went, oh, at that bit, because until that point, I hadn't thought whether or not they were definitely, because also they dealt with things like the poisoning element, didn't they? And whether or not she might have been kind of slowly losing her mind through the poisoning and through isolation. And
I at first I didn't think there was gonna be a ghost behind her when she said that. I thought she was just doing the old classic like comedy routine of look behind you, there's someone right there.
Then she hits her with a giant mallet.
Yeah.
And then she was in the comedic yeah. I had written the film, that's how it would have ended.
I love the way it built tension as well. Like it was the way that it was, she kind of slowly moves around the house and is looking at things, and it does that thing that a lot of great gothic-y horror type does, which is it draws your attention to something that isn't really there to see, while something else, it's almost like a distraction technique, I guess, if that makes sense, a sleight of hand almost, where you're looking here and what, and then the kind of the thrilling thing happens here, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I'm not a fan of feeling tense when I watch a film.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/ACAST. That's burrow.com/ACAST. burrow.com/ACAST.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
And for a lot of it, especially in the house, I'm sat there going, I can't really cope with this anymore. Like, you know, when she opens, I think, one of the doors in the hallway and then the ghost just sort of like shuts it like that.
Hmm. Yeah, it's like a face in the cupboard or something.
Yeah, it was that moment I thought, oh man, this is stressing me out, this film.
See, I wouldn't usually pick something that'd make me jump. Not because I kind of, you know, like people say that thing about horror being this really a pure genre and it's good to feel alive, like going on a roller coaster or whatever. It's that it's almost healthy to be scared. So I'm like you, I kind of just sit there going, I'm wound up now.
I think it's all dependent on kind of how you see it. Because I think if you see it like in a cinema with surround sound and it's all dark, you're so much more immersed in a horror than if you watch it like during the day in your living room. Do you know what I mean? I think so much of watching a horror film is about the atmosphere and the
environment you're
in whilst watching.
I watched it in the day and I made sure I drew all the curtains and stuff because the sun was hitting the telly, but also I wanted it to be dark when I was watching
it. It's like I went to go see, I remember going to see The Exorcism of Emily Rose at like a midnight screening. And then I remember we drove back afterwards and I don't know what was going on, but there was some kind of like police search going on right near my house with like helicopters and dogs and stuff. And I remember being so freaked out driving back to mine at like 2 a.m. with all this going on, having just seen a film that wasn't an amazing film, but like I quite like that scariness feeling of being in that zone.
I watched this on IMAX for the first time. Well, it wasn't like a full IMAX, it was like IMAX where it's not really the full IMAX. IMAX surround sound, and that is why I consider this movie scary, because I was terrified. I don't know what it is about no one else being scared by this movie. I'm like, I find it scary.
No, I found bits of scary. The ghost crawling along the corridor, the weird face in the cupboard.
Yeah, her dead mom like shoving her hands through the door.
I thought Jessica Chastain was just wonderfully creepy through the whole thing, really.
Some of the stabbings and the wounds and stuff were just like really brutal.
Oh yeah.
Like the head smash thing. That was stabbing in the cheek and the head smashing on the sink. It was like it was really raw.
And I think that's the best way to use gore and violence in a film, is it's not, if you use it too much, you kind of almost numb yourself to it. Whereas if you use it well and sparingly, it has a bigger impact for me.
Did you see Midsommar?
No, I haven't seen it. From what I've heard about it, I'm not sure I can even bring myself to watch it.
Because there's some pretty, like, horrendously gory bits in that.
Mm-hmm. Why do you think this kind of did almost come and go a little bit? Why do you think it didn't kind of have as big an effect as you possibly think it deserved?
I think it is that combination of the fact it was sold as a horror film and the fact that, I mean, it is a horror film, but not in the way that we traditionally see on cinema screens. And also, I think just like gothic literature and the idea of the gothic is not super popular at the moment. And it's quite a bit of like a niche, and I would say quite like feminine. Like it's quite a girly movie. And I think it was sold to people as this very like, yeah, horror, bro, horror. And then you come and you want, and it's this like romantic, and there's Tom Hiddleston's butt, and it's and it's like it's a lot of different things to what it was sold to audiences, I think. And I saw that a lot in the reactions of people being like, oh yeah, it's not scary, it's like it's too like silly, and like it is silly, but that's part of the genre. It's kind of over the top and ridiculous, and yeah, there's like brothers and sisters like running around being like, we're in love and we killed our mother, and it's completely over the top, but that's like part of the joy of it. And I think that's all of that together is quite niche and quite difficult to just sell to audiences.
It's almost like a gothic melodrama, isn't it?
Yeah, I was going to say melodrama, yeah.
Gothic is quite that's the thing, like gothic is very melodramatic in its nature, but I think, I feel like we culturally at the moment have sort of lost a grip on what gothic is. I know that sounds really weird, but like that's the thing, that there are so few movies that are like Crimson Peak coming out at the moment, because I think gothic to us is now like, I don't know, it's like vampires in fishnet tights.
It's one of those genres, it's like almost like a that they don't seem to be able to get quite right in terms of attracting a mass market. I mean, it's like, reminds me a bit of like steampunk. Like every couple of years they try and do a steampunk film, and it's like always seem to spend an inordinate amount of money on this film, on a steampunk film, and then they release it and it just kind of falls on its ass a little bit.
Are we talking about Mortal Engines?
Mortal Engines, but like there's other stuff. I'm trying to think, like a little bit Van Helsing-y, I suppose. Terms of the other end of blockbusters, Van Helsing, even like A League of Extraordinary Gentlemen, they bring these, and it's just like the public almost, it's like they don't quite know what they're in for.
Yeah, because I guess it's an antiquated genre. I mean, the gothic and steam and steam, well, not steampunk, but I guess like Jules Verne, that was all like the Marvel and Star Wars of its time. Like that was a thing that was created at a very specific time period, and it was really popular in that time period. And there's so many people who still love it now, but it's not new. It's like deliberately historical in a way. Mm-hmm.
Maybe it's like one of the, like you say, maybe it's like one of those genres, like a body snatcher movie that will come back eventually one day.
Oh yeah, well, even like musicals. I also love musicals, and for years we had just no musicals coming out, and then we had La La Land, and now like finally musicals are starting to come out again, and I'm so excited. Mm-hmm. So like I feel quite disheartened sometimes because I love so many like unpopular genres. Like I love musicals, and I love gothic horror. These are just movies that nobody else really wants to watch.
I definitely feel like we're coming to a point now where sort of musicals have become cool again.
I agree.
Thank God.
Yeah. With the exception of Cats.
Yeah. Well, look, this is the thing about popular genres, is when a genre is finally popular, you have to have some disasters to balance it out. Because that means it's truly like back in the mainstream.
Yeah.
Look at like, look at some of the comic book films with, for every Captain America, there's a Batman and Robin. So, yeah.
Exactly.
So, is there anything kind of having watched it again, Cruise? Is there anything that you would change, or anything you don't like that you kind of might alter about the film, or is it just a stone cold? Which is fine if it is that. Is it a stone cold? You love it, and that's that.
Yeah, like every time I forget how much I love the movie, and then I rewatch it, and I just sit there going, this is perfect. This is perfect. This is the perfect movie. And I know that it isn't, but I know that personally it just hits like so many. Everything I want is just in this movie. All the passion and the beautiful costumes and the horror and the blood and the pain and the, I don't know, it's like everything in one movie.
It's a beautiful looking film. Like the costumes are incredible, like across the board. It's the costume and like I remember seeing, the good Dr. Kermo's review talking about the red clay and like the blood and the way it all kind of builds to this aesthetic. I think it's I thought that was amazing. I thought it just looked incredible. I mean, I personally don't have anything that I think could be scared, it could be changed. The only thing, like I just said earlier, I'm not a big fan of jump scares, but that's not a problem with the film. That's the problem with me being a bit of a wimp. Adam, was there anything you would change about it?
Charlie Hunnam, his accent is always not quite right.
Yeah, it's a little off.
I've never seen him in anything where I've thought, oh, Charlie Hunnam, you've nailed that accent. Everything I've seen him do, his accent's never quite there. And it's always like, are you not working with a dialect coach for this, Charlie? Come on.
I feel like, because have you heard his, just when he doesn't, his normal speaking voice?
Mm-hmm.
Because it's sort of, because he's from Newcastle, right? And it's a Geordie accent, but then it's also not quite a Geordie accent. And so I wonder if he just like, and I feel that this is relatable because I also just don't have a normal voice, which is why I can't do accents because I have no basic, I have no like ground to leap from. So I don't really know that much about his background. I wonder whether he has like some sort of like international thing going on with his accent, and that's why he always like sounds slightly strange in every movie. Because I've seen movies where he uses his normal speaking voice, and it also like sounds like he's doing a weird accent.
But then I'd say like Tom Hardy has got quite a nondescript accent, but then he's still able to do other accents.
Yeah, but I don't. It's not so much like a nondescript. I don't know. There is something there. And I don't feel like he's ever spoken about it because it's a rude question to ask.
Yeah,
like, what's up with your accent?
What's wrong with you? Great voice work in this, Charlie.
I always think Charlie Hunnam's pretty solid in whatever.
Yeah, I don't think he's a bad actor in any way. I think he's a good actor, but it's just his accent is always just not quite right.
I agree.
I would say he has an interesting voice. That's always been my takeaway. I never think he's doing a bad accent, but I'm like, That's a really unusual way of saying
memorable.
That. Enjoying that. Mm. Yeah, I kind of like it.
Just stay in your head.
he's one of my picks for the next Bond. I know it's quite controversial, but I think he's if it wasn't for the fact that his performance, I can imagine being a little too similar to Daniel Craig's. I think they'll go different to Daniel Craig because they like to mix it up, don't they?
The ghost element at the beginning. How come her ghost mum is like, beware of crimson peaks when she's a child? So I don't understand how come her ghost mum can predict the future when she's a child.
Because, so this is like a big thing in Gothic literature, is that ghosts are always messengers, and often they are coming to give a warning. So I think in the universe of Gothic literature, like once you die and go to the netherworld, you do gain some like sort of power of knowledge and like omniscience. And that's the thing, because like ghosts can kind of like pop around anywhere and do like weird stuff anyway. So I think there is always this idea in the genre that they just like, they do know things. And that's why all the other ghosts in Crimson Peak like immediately know what's going on. The second Edith walks in, it's like, oh no. They're always messengers.
I know it's not necessarily Gothic, but I suppose if you think of like Jacob Marley and in the Christmas Carol, he knows what's going to happen to Scrooge, and that's why he goes to tell him he's the messenger in the story, I suppose.
Yeah, I think Christmas Carol, like, I don't know that huge amount. I think it is sort of like leaning into Gothic stuff. Mm. I feel like I've read that somewhere.
What about you, Al? Is there anything you kind of, apart from what you've already said, is there anything you'd change?
There's not much I'd change, because it's just because I'm not particularly warm about the film. That's more my own personal taste rather than any reflection on the film. But me and my partner were watching it, and we, you know, the ghost at the beginning, don't go to Crimson Peak or whatever she's saying. If she just spoke a little bit more, if she just said a little bit more and gave some more helpful advice about why she shouldn't go to Crimson Peak.
So your problem with the film is that one of the ghosts isn't like helpful enough.
Yeah. Crimson Peak. But why?
But this is like, again, sorry, I'm being such a nerd. This is a mistake. I shouldn't have picked this movie because I get too nerdy about it. But like, this is again, like a kind of like a Gothic literature thing. It's like the messenger. It's like whenever you get some like ominous message in any kind of literature, it's never like the full picture, because that's sort of, it's kind of going back to like ancient Greece and like the Delphic Oracle. And, you know, she'd like huff natural gases and then be like, beware the Ides of March. I know that's different, but, you know, yeah, like beware the Ides of March. That's a great example of like every like warning throughout literature, throughout history has always been like really vague. And it's sort of like it's like an odd literary tactic that there is like an internal logic in fiction that messengers only know part of the story,
and they've got a film to make. They can't get the ghost.
Don't go to Crimson Peak because some inbred siblings are gonna try and kill you. Like, and then the credits just roll. Like,
I did enjoy the moment when she found out it was called Crimson Peak, and she's like, "Oh no, what my ghost mum said? I shouldn't be here."
Yeah.
So I suppose moving on to where we usually try and decide whether a film is underrated or underappreciated. So if you have a little look at the kind of critical reception. So first of all, a lot of the big critics, obviously Clarice included, but like Robbie Collin, Mark Kermode, Kim Newman, all praised the film from what I could read on the old interweb. They all seem to really like it. So it seems to be fairly, obviously to counteract what we said earlier, but the critics loved it, or some of the critics that I read about loved it. Also quite enjoyed the fact that Tom Huddleston from Time Out really liked it.
That's just Tom Hiddleston and he's using a different name. We know that.
I'm going to submit a review. What's the name? Huddleston.
I'll never know.
But general idea, off IMDb, it gets a kind of 6.5 out of 10. Rotten Tomatoes, the audience give it 72%. Sorry, no, the critics give it 72% and the audience give it 55%. So, Clarice, we'll come to you first, probably easiest answer. What would you say? Fairly confident you probably think it's underrated. Am I right?
Yeah, oh my God, 55%. No.
Yeah, that is
100. 100.
Adam?
Yeah, I'd say the audience score is a little low on 55%, but I think sort of 6.5 to 7 is about right for me.
Al?
I think the score is fair, but if you like the gothic slash horror slash whatever it is genre, I guess it's underrated. It's not for me, but I guess it would be an underrated film because, like you say, I heard of it and then 10 seconds later I'd forgot about it. Like I don't know many people who have seen it or even talk about it. So I'd go underrated even though it wasn't for me.
I'm going to agree with Clarice. I think it's both. I think it's underseen. I think we'd all agree it's underseen because we've all talked about how it came out and it wasn't a massive commercial success. But I do think it's also pretty underrated in general. I would put it higher than that. It's not often do we pick a film when we do this, and I think I'd watch that again. Whereas I would watch this again. I thought it was entertaining. It was very visceral. It was scary. It looked incredible. For me, we'll call it a draw because I make that underrated for me personally. So,
well, look, I converted one person to Team Crimson. I feel like my job is done.
So, Clarice, thanks very much for coming on. Is there anything that we need to look out for?
Oh, thank you so much. My writing stuff you can all find on my Twitter. I am also doing a podcast at the moment called The Next Supremes, talking of gothic things if you're a fan of American Horror Story. But I also post that on my Twitter. So just come find me on Twitter.
What's your handle?
At Clarice Liu, which is just me trying to type my name out and then I ran out of space. So just start typing my name out and then I'll come up. Don't worry about it.
Brilliant. Well, please do go over there and check that out because I follow you on Twitter and there's always some great stuff on there, particularly when you're arguing with trolls about the film Crash.
They were so mad.
Thanks very much to Clarice for coming on. It's nice to have someone on who knows considerably more about films and what goes into films than we do. It was a fantastic of her to come on. You know, like she said to us before we and after we recorded, she's busy working on stuff, trying to keep busy during the lockdown. That is the second of our lockdown specials. We'll hopefully have another one next week. If you do want to get in touch with us in the meantime, it's filmsandthatpod@gmail.com. Twitter is @films_that. We're on Facebook, we're on Instagram, filmsandthatpod. Thanks very much, Adam Ward.
Toodaloo, Mother Hubbard.
Thank you very much, Al Bollins.
Thank you very much.
And it's goodbye from me. Cheerio. Hello, Josh here again. I just wanted to take another little minute to say thanks again for downloading the podcast. It really is greatly appreciated. If you do like it, then please like, subscribe, and rate us wherever you get your podcasts. Special mentions go to Lee for the music, Luke for the logo, and Abby for producing, editing, and generally putting up with us. If you'd like to get in touch with the podcast, it's filmsandthatpod@gmail.com. Thanks once again, and see you next week. Cheerio.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns. Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus,
Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.